Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple, with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is August 31st, 2010, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 177, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, consultant to China Unicom Special Services. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM.
Pew, 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 pew. Pew, 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 pew.
At macobserver.com. Thank you, Melissa.
So how are you doing, Brian?
Pretty good, actually. Seeing a little light at the end of the tunnel on those book projects, and
excellent.
Yeah, excellent. And it's been fun and entertaining and educational.
You know, book writing is very educational on so many levels.
It is, yeah. On some, you're right.
Yeah.
However, I have an appointment at the Apple Store to take my iPad in for a cracked screen.
Yeah, that really sucks.
It does, but it probably means we shouldn't dilly-dally.
I think that's exactly what it means. All right, so I'm going to take that as a hint to catch my breath and then jump us into the next part.
I love it.
China Unicom is in the jailbreaking business. Brian has some new Apple death knell fodder, and one of our listeners calls us to task over our take on the iPad. China Unicom is offering a unique service to its iPhone and iPad customers in the form of in-store jailbreaking. The company is offering to hack users' iPhones so they can install unauthorized third-party apps, and they're also offering to trim SIM cards to fit the iPhone 4 and iPad micro SIM trays. The fact that China Unicom's stores are openly offering the service comes as something of a surprise, considering Apple doesn't officially support or condone hacking your iPhone, and it gives users access to apps that aren't available through Apple's own App Store. Since Apple won't support iPhones or iPads that have been jailbroken, China Unicom's new service could create a few headaches for those customers that let China Unicom hack their phones and then later turn to Apple for support.
Oops. Last Friday, I was able to do a strange thing. And that's added an entry to the Apple death knell counter, even in 2010. It's amazing. But it is true. Fabrice Grinda, CEO of some company or other that I don't care about, penned a well-written article making the case that Apple will lose the smartphone battle due to its proprietary hardware and software business model. We'll talk more about this in the Context Machine within the Context Machine, which is where we're going next. And that sound means that we're here. Yay!
Go us.
So the Context Machine is where we basically try to add context to what's going on and just basically talk about what we think about some of the news that's been happening.
I think that's an excellent explanation of what we do.
Dankeschön.
Yes. So what should we hit first? China Unicom?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Okay.
It's kind of wacky, isn't it?
Yeah. When I first started seeing the reports about that, I had to do a lot of looking around because it seemed to me that something got lost from the translation from Chinese to English and that everyone was misinterpreting what was going on here. And it turns out we actually weren't. Some of the China Unicom stores are actually offering to jailbreak and install apps for their customers.
And those apps are, I think personally, that there's a good chance that what they're really, really talking about is pirated apps, not just you know, apps that are available through Cydia or the other online non-authorized jailbroken iPhone only stores, but just, you know, apps that have been pirated.
I would like to think that you are completely wrong on that, but considering that ideas on piracy are a little bit different, at least for some people in China. I'm thinking
culturally, yeah. I think it's safe to go ahead and say that piracy is looked at differently within the Chinese culture.
Yeah, and that's what makes me think that you may actually be right.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's strange to me. I Apple's position in China is a lot different than it is anywhere else on the planet. In part because, of course, the government controls so much of commerce. And also in part because Apple doesn't have a big foothold there, and they don't wield the same kind of clout that they have in, well, everywhere else, because they don't have that foothold.
Yeah, doing business in China is different from doing business anywhere else in the world. I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek. I'm a little surprised that when I asked Apple and China Unicom for comments on the situation, neither company responded.
Yeah, Jeff told me that he had asked them for comment, and I told him I was going to start holding my breath until he got a response. And we had this whole thing going on through text message that was pretty funny, but you kind of had to be there, and now I'm really wishing I hadn't mentioned it.
Well, suffice it to say, Brian is very clever, and I'm glad that you didn't, in real life, suffer from oxygen deprivation.
it's true, because I would have been out long before either company got back to us with questions about that. So, you know, I think the question is going to be, is what can Apple or will Apple do about this? Because, I mean, they may not have a lot of options. Maybe they don't care. It's a really, really interesting situation.
Well, I'm wondering if one of the reasons China Unicom stores are doing this is to remain competitive with the gray market dealers.
It could be. However, they should be able to offer better pricing than the gray market, because the gray market is, generally speaking, buying these devices either used or at full retail price, and then, you know, reselling them. And the reason why the gray market existed is because Apple wasn't otherwise directly selling these devices in China.
Right. And then there was the whole thing with no Wi-Fi in China iPhones until just recently. And that sure made it a lot easier for people to turn to the gray market.
Right.
So I could see where jailbreaking would be another tool that China Unicom could use to help sway legit customers.
Yeah, I guess. I would just think that Apple would have conniption, or just started having conniption fits when this news broke. I mean, I think it embarrasses them, for one thing, if they can't do something about this, this might result in the company losing some bits of control with other non-U.S. retailers and carriers too. It is going to have a snowball effect, but it could have repercussions for Apple.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about the snowball effect until you mentioned it, but I could see where other carriers might say, well, look, you know, China Unicom set the precedent, so
yeah, what are you going to do about it?
Right,
we're just going to do this anyway. So, you know.
Yeah, my guess is that Apple has already had a talk with all the other carriers about the China Unicom situation.
Yeah, maybe. You know, and I wonder what's going to happen when, you know, these people, the customers of China Unicom, buy an iPhone from China Unicom, Apple's authorized carrier and reseller. Reseller, even. And get it hacked, and then they try to get support through Apple for it. You know what's I mean, you know what's going to happen to them? I mean, it's an interesting conundrum. Apple could end up looking bad for not supporting these devices when it's China Unicom that's breaking Apple's policies to begin with.
Yeah, Apple can't be happy about this because right now, unless they can get China Unicom to just stop offering the service and it just goes away and no one says anything, there's really not a way for Apple to look good in all of this.
Nope. All right. So now I just had a thought pop into my head. There have been all these rumors of a CDMA iPhone. Right? And
yes.
the context has always been, of course, that those devices that Apple was developing an iPhone for Verizon, which uses a CDMA.
Which I've never bought into, but right.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We can get into that another time, but
right.
But yeah, we'll just leave that aside for now. But the reality is that China Mobile, which is China's largest carrier, I mean, they have more customers than the U.S. has people.
That's just insane.
Which is, yeah, it's crazy for us, yeah. Their network is a CDMA network. And I've often thought that Apple, well, and actually until Steve Jobs said that there may be advantages to offering the iPhone and other carriers in the U.S., until he said that, I thought it was more likely that China Mobile would get an iPhone before Verizon did.
Yeah.
But if Apple is developing a phone for China Mobile and China Unicom is not willing to control this service that's being offered within some of its own retailers, it could result in rather than there being two carriers in China, it could resort in China Unicom being dumped.
Okay, that's an interesting idea. And I'm betting China Unicom would not appreciate losing the iPhone.
No, I mean, it hasn't been a big hit, but it has been, you know, they have sold iPhones in quantity.
They have.
Yeah, they haven't sold 15 million of them, but they've sold, I believe at this point, a couple of million of them. And, you know, that's a lot of phones. That's a lot of minutes. It's a lot of traffic.
Yeah, and I think the iPhone probably has been a big hit in China. It's just that the majority of the iPhones have been sold gray market instead of through official channels.
Oh, I bet, Jeff, by once Apple brought it to China Unicom, I'm sure that the legit iPhone sold in the country quickly eclipsed the gray market.
You think so?
But, yeah, there's way too much hassles.
Well,
even though they're hobbled, yeah, it's just a matter of, you know, it's so expensive and such a hassle because Apple was being, once Apple clamped down on how many units people could buy and, you know, all that sort of thing, it became much more problematic to actually get the phones over to India and China, where most of the gray markets were because Apple wasn't otherwise there.
Okay, I'm not familiar enough with the way Chinese business and Chinese culture works to refute you on that.
Well, yeah, and I, of course, as we all know, am a complete expert in all matters, both Chinese and Indian.
You are totally a modern major general, aren't you?
Yeah, so, and I know, you know, neither one of us knows enough to talk about most of the things we talk about, but we never let that stop us. let's call this spade a spade. But seriously, I mean, I don't think that there were millions of iPhones sold in the gray market in China before China Unicom got it. I think that there were tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands. But there were not millions, and Apple has definitely sold, or China Unicom has definitely sold more than a million devices. I mean, they passed the million mark months ago.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure that most of the iPhones in the country are legit.
Okay. Well, nonetheless, Apple has a situation here.
Apple does have a situation.
And I'm curious to see how this plays out.
Right. And unfortunately, well, hopefully the news will be covered in some fashion or another. You know, we're not in China, and our China bureau is woefully understaffed right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, good manpower can be hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on the gray market.
Hmm. Speaking of manpower, you know what can save you some manpower?
Do tell.
Citrix.
You know, you're absolutely right.
Because Citrix is one of our sponsors this week with their Go-To Assist Express.
Which can be a fantastic time saver and manpower saver.
Exactly. Exactly. What a wonderful opportunity for a segue there. So Go-To Assist Express is a product that allows you to access someone else's computer with their permission remotely. Completely hassle-free without a bunch of software. And, there's a bunch of software, but it's all going on behind the scenes with Citrix.
Right. So you don't need extra software because they've got it all.
Right. And they're sponsoring us. And if you go to gotoassistexpress.com/machine, you will find a special offer allowing you to try the service for 30 days for free.
And it's a great tool for people that want to help family and friends without having to see them face-to-face. And it's a great tool for consultants.
No drive time. No drive time. And consultants, as you said, and people that are supporting machines within any kind of work environment or work-at-home environment. It's a really, really cool and hassle-free way to do this remote access thing, and it's something that the people at Citrix with their whole Go-To line, they've been doing it for a long time now.
Yes, so go check it out. Get your free
month. Please do. We would appreciate it.
Yes, we would.
Yes, we would. Alrighty, so now let's talk about the death knell counter.
Yeah. You know, when you said that you had a death knell counter article you're going to write, mm-hmm. I'm really glad I was sitting down. Not because you said you were going to write something. It was because it was death knell counter.
That is a cause for alarm and surprise. Or surprise and alarm, as Monty Python might say.
Now, you're awesome. The stuff you write is fantastic, and we would be at a loss without you.
Oh, well, thank you. But some of our listeners may not know what the Apple death knell counter is, because it's it did cease to become as important as it used to be. But what it is, it's a chronicle, a ledger even, a history even, of all the numbnuts, including me, who have said that Apple was either about to die, that the Mac was about to die, that the iPhone was about to die, that the iPod was about to die, that Apple was going to have to switch to open licensing and basically do Microsoft's business model or die. All these kinds of people who basically predict either Apple's demise or the demise of some aspect of Apple's business model. We've got a chronicle called the Apple Death Knell Counter that, sort of keeps them around all for posterity.
Yeah. And so this latest one targets the iPhone specifically, right?
It does. And one of our readers kind of took exception to it even being included in the Death Knell Counter. So to explain what it was that was said and why it is that I included it, we'll give you the background.
Cool.
So, Fabrice Grinda is the CEO of, honestly, I forget what company. Let's see if I don't have it here. Do I have it? Do
I
have
it? I thought he was from some company or another.
He is actually from some company or another. And he was writing a piece for 4444 Business Insider, and it's a really well written piece. I mean, the guy's obviously smart, but he makes this grand case that because Apple follows a proprietary hardware and software business model, that the glory of Android was going to not only surpass Apple, but relegate the iPhone to a niche status. Now, that in and of itself is not a death knell. As one of our readers said, that he's just making the case for the marginalization of the iPhone. And that's true. The reason why I included it as a death knell was because this guy is saying that open licensing is the only way to compete, and that Apple's proprietary model cannot succeed. That it is that the only possibility of following such a proprietary model, where one company controls the hardware and the software, that can only lead to failure. And his assertion was that Apple would therefore lose this battle. That it's a battle to be lost. There can only be one winner, and that winner will not be Apple. Now, and to me, that's what qualified it as a death knell, because he's just one of these guys that doesn't understand that some people like the whole widget approach that Apple offers.
Now, is this possible that it's another case of someone saying Apple's model will fail because it's not the model that I prefer and that I understand? Since it's different, it can't succeed.
Well, he does. I mean, he talks about Apple's early lead. He talks a lot about like the PC versus Mac battle that Apple seemingly lost in the 80s and 90s, and he basically uses that as as an example of why Apple will therefore fail with the iPhone. And it's not that he talks about Apple's early lead and everything. It's just he concludes that the open model will eventually surpass that early lead. So I've got so many problems with that. So the first thing is that if you're gonna be in 1996 or 1997, I think it's a reasonable conclusion to say that Apple lost the Mac versus PC battle. I mean, Steve Jobs said it. Steve Jobs says there is no battle. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember that, and I agree completely. The PC versus Mac war ended a long time ago, and Windows won.
And Windows won, sort of.
Yeah, well, Windows won, and then Apple did something different outside of that war, which was switch to Unix and change hardware platforms, and they did a different thing. So, they let Microsoft have that other war and then moved on to something else.
They completely changed the rules by which they were competing.
Yes.
And while everyone else is competing on price and speed, Apple started competing on style and experience. And so while I think it's reasonable to say if you're standing in 1996, 97, 98, maybe 99 even, maybe even 2000, I think that it's reasonable to conclude that Apple just, lost that battle. But today we have, I think, was it the last 12 quarters or something, or 16 quarters, where the Mac platform has outgrown the PC platform?
Yeah, it might actually be 16. It's more than 12 quarters.
Yeah, it's just quarter after quarter after quarter, Apple keeps growing the Mac platform, keeps gaining market share. I mean, they're still a tiny player, but actually, they're not really all that tiny. Now they tend to be in the top five.
Yes, and then if you take into account the number of Macs that are out in the world that have never been retired,
right?
Then that number's even higher.
Yeah. Apple's share of computer users is higher than its current market share, simply because Macs do tend to be used longer, right?
Right.
And so today we've got Apple selling more and more Macs, even while their prices are even more disproportionately higher than, I'm not sure if that's grammatically correct.
I loved how it sounded, though.
Today's Mac prices are even higher than PC prices than they were 10 or 15 years ago, because there's been this huge race to the bottom with the PC market.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you look at the numbers, because if you look at just the numbers themselves, there's that huge difference, because you're right, the PC market has been a race to the bottom. But when you start comparing feature for feature and matching hardware specs, oftentimes you can end up with a Mac that costs less than a comparable Windows machine.
Right. If you value what the Mac is offering.
That's true. Yes.
If you don't value style, if you don't value the end-user experience that Apple offers, if you don't value the software that comes with the Mac, if you don't value those things, well, then no, you can get a cheaper PC. But right. The reality is that more and more people are valuing that. That's the thing. If you look at Mac versus PC in 2010, Apple is the company that's making all the profits from hardware sales, at least. You've got Intel, Apple, and Microsoft making all the profits from computers, and you've got Apple increasing its market share and increasing the number of Macs that are being sold. You know, it wasn't too long ago where Apple was selling, you know, fewer than a million Macs a quarter, and now they're selling more than 3 million Macs a quarter. I mean, that's a huge increase.
And it wasn't that long ago that Apple was hoping to be a $10 billion a year company, and they've hit that in quarters now.
Yeah, this quarter they guided for $18 billion. They guided for $18 billion in a single quarter. And if they guided for $18 billion, they're probably going to do $20, right? Because that's what they do.
Yeah.
And so, which, by the way, I'm not trying to say that Apple has won that battle, that platform war. I'm just saying that through a contemporary lens, they didn't lose it. And I think that anyone who looks back at the computing history and in 2010, that anyone that says that Apple lost the platform war, I think it's not accurate. It's just not accurate. I mean, you can define win and lose all you want, but to me, Apple is the big winner today in general.
Oh yeah, the numbers show Apple is winning at the game that they want to play.
At the game that they want to play, exactly. So, on top of that, Apple, the 30 years now of the PC world with its open licensing model, Microsoft's open licensing model, has not managed to catch up to Apple in the end-user experience. Now, this is a subjective thing, and if you think that Microsoft Windows 7 is just as good as Mac OS X on a Mac, you're welcome to that opinion. I personally disagree.
Yeah, I prefer the consistency that you get with Mac OS X, which is also the same thing that I say about iOS on the iPhone. Having compared iOS and Android,
mm-hmm.
A lot of the complaints that I have about Windows are mirrored on Android. There's no consistency in interface design. A lot of what you do with navigating and operating inside applications, it's kind of a guessing game because there's no standardization. And then it can be confusing trying to figure out what apps you have running, if apps are even running. When I'm saying these things, I'm talking about Windows and Android at the same time.
Right. And I think that Android is going to do just fine.
Oh, absolutely.
But this cat, Fabrice Grinda, says that Android's open model, open licensing model, is going to overcome Apple's early lead in the user experience and everything else. Well, my question is, if the Windows world hasn't managed to do that in 30 years with billions of dollars, billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars in revenue and profits, hasn't managed to overcome that lead in the computer business, how is Android going to be able to quickly do that in the smartphone market where the OS is free?
Yeah, and okay, so here's another thing that I keep thinking about, and for some reason I have a feeling that a lot of these experts and pundits that are talking about how iOS is going to lose, this isn't Highlander. There doesn't have to be just one.
There can be only one. Yeah, that is true. That is absolutely true, as a matter of fact. And the reality is, you know, Jeff and I have both said that, of course, Android will eventually get bigger than iPhone. And it will do so because of the things that Fabrice is talking about. That, you know, there's jillions of Android models. You know, there's, you know, all sorts of niche approaches can be taken, and you know, everything from the super cheap to the super expensive is going to eventually be on the market, and all these things are going to result in Android getting bigger than iPhone. The question is, how small will iPhone get, and at what point has Apple supposedly lost the smartphone battle?
Well, I don't think the iPhone will ever be marginalized.
No, I don't either.
But
it won't be marginalized.
As soon as we have a quarter where there's hard proof that Android sales figures are above iPhone sales figures worldwide, that will be the quarter where you'll get reporters and analysts all over everywhere going, well, that's it. The iPhone just died. Apple just lost.
Yeah.
And then we'll continue to hear that ad nauseum forever, because there will always be the group of people that wants to bag on the iPhone because it's an Apple product. And, well, that's their thing. And I'll keep using my iPhone, and it'll continue to be a great device.
And Apple will continue to make the lion's share of the profits. And we'll probably still have more apps out there, because so far all the evidence shows that the money in mobile apps, almost all of it is flowing to the App Store. Yeah, there are a lot of there are now, I guess, 70,000 Android apps, which is less than a third of what Apple has at the App Store. But that's a growing number, and that's good, and that's fine, and that's dandy. But I think it's something like it was well over 90% of Android downloads are free, and it's 80% of App Store downloads that are free.
Yeah, the percentage of free downloads for Android is higher than it is for iOS.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean that's gonna keep development efforts with the iOS platform long after Android becomes bigger. And I mean, there is room for plenty of competitors, and I think that Apple is going to maintain a significant percentage of this market. It will be a minority percentage.
But it will be a significant minority. It won't be like 7%.
It won't be like 3% or 2% like they got down to with the Mac platform in the early 2000s.
Right. And I think we'll have three players, you know, maybe four, that are divvying up the smartphone market. So it won't be like any one of them has 80% of the market.
But no. Well, I don't know. Android can end up getting 60-70% of the market eventually.
Yeah, maybe.
But I think that Apple's going to be at 20-25% of the market. And that's not niche status. That's not marginalized. And it is going to be a very healthy level where Apple can basically, again, make the lion's share of the hardware profits.
Yeah, and it, regardless of how the numbers play out for who has the majority of the market, Apple will still be making a significant amount of money off of all this.
Yes. Yes, that is absolutely the case. So that's why I included in the Apple death knell counter. It's death knell number 54. If you see someone proclaiming the death of Apple, the iPhone, the Mac, whatever, let me know. Love adding things to the death knell counter. I'm in the death knell counter, by the way. I said something about Steve Jobs having done enough to save Apple back in 1998.
You made your own death knell counter.
I did. Well, I had to. I said something stupid. I was wrong.
Well, you know, that's pretty cool that you can man up and put yourself in the death knell counter when necessary.
Thank you. Thank you. So now the funny thing is that if you stand still long enough, the world will come back to you eventually.
Yes, it will.
And
I love these segues.
Such is the case with our second sponsor, the newly renamed Smile Software.
Yes, formerly Smile on my Mac, now Smile Software.
Yep.
And yeah, the we're supposed to tell everyone about the joys of Disclabel.
Disclabel, which has been the special that's been offered on our special page at smilesoftware.com/AWR. It's been there for a while. And now it's actually accurate again.
It is. So you're right. Everything that goes around comes around. We waited long enough, and now there it is again. And yep. Okay, so if you're not familiar with Disclabel, it's a really cool application that lets you design and print your own CD, DVD, jewel cases, and labels.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to use. It's designed so that non-designers can create really nice looking layouts for their albums and movies. And it comes with a ton of different templates for all the different types of pre-built forms that you can go out and get, like like Avery labels,
right?
Things like that. And it even supports the Light Scribe. Thank you.
Yep.
You could see me waving my hand in the air as if I was inscribing a disc with my built-in laser, couldn't you?
I could, yes.
Yeah. So, so it's a fantastic product. And coming from the design world and being impressed with a product like this, I think that says a lot.
Yeah, it comes with a lot of templates, and it's really easy to use. It's a good product. And if you go to our URL, which will be in the show notes,
right,
you can get it for a 20% discount.
Well, that's an awesome deal.
Yeah, so $28.76 instead of the $35.95 price. And that's smilesoftware.com/AWR. For Apple Weekly Report. It's a long story. The other thing we should mention there is that this name change that they went is kind of a big deal, too. That whole going from Smile on my Mac to Smile or Smile Software.
Which, it makes sense because they write applications for the iPhone.
Yep.
And iPad now, too. Yep. So it makes sense to have a company name that reflects their broader platform base that they support.
Yep. And they're a great company, and they make great products. And so we'd like you to support them.
Yes, please.
All righty. Now, Mr. Gary Hughley, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing your name right, Gary, took us to task over talking up the iPad as a content creation device.
He most certainly did. And he posits that using a netbook as a content creation device compared to an iPad makes much more sense.
Right. And I, Jeff and I will both be the first to say that this is a subjective thing.
That's true. The tool that's the correct one for the job is the one that works best for you in that situation.
Right. And I am not going to sit here and tell you that the iPad is the best content creation device on the planet, because it's not. A computer still is.
Yes. Yes.
But let me read from his letter.
Please do.
You even said that Keynote Pages and Numbers were really good. In fact, way better than a netbook. Huh? I've never heard of Keynote Pages or Numbers for the iPad being anything other than, quote, good if you're stuck and have nothing else, unquote. In fact, you were the first to say that the iPad Office-type apps are really good. He goes on to say that a netbook running Office 2007 runs it just fine, that Office 2007 and Office XP are far superior to the iPad Office-type apps, etc. All right, so all very valid points, Gary. However, I personally, so actually, I've got
good job, Gary. Look what you just did to Brian.
I'm broken. So, in the two dummies books that I'm working on, where I'm talking about apps that are out there, I make a very specific case that Pages, Keynote, and Pages and Numbers are not trying to be Microsoft Word and Microsoft Excel competitors. Would you agree with that or disagree?
I would agree. The fact that they are compatible with Microsoft applications does not necessarily mean that they are competing for the same market.
Right. Word and Excel have features that are aimed... they've got a lot of features that the vast majority of users will never touch. There's a lot of publishing stuff in Word. There's a lot of really, really heavy duty, pro level document processing that Word allows you to do. Word for both Windows and the Mac, I might add.
Yes. Yes.
And of course, you know, Excel is definitely the premier standalone spreadsheet app.
Yes.
On the market. But Pages is aimed at, you know, small business owners and PTA organizers and people making church newsletters and people making thank you notes that they want to send out to people and invitations, people, students that are writing reports. And Numbers is aimed at, you know, at some of those very same people. And Numbers, to me, in many ways, is much more of a charts and graph spreadsheet app than it is a straight data manipulation spreadsheet app.
Yeah, you know, if you want to have that super granular control over what's happening with the numbers that are in your spreadsheets, there are certainly more options open to you with Excel than with Numbers. That said, I have written some insanely complex calculations in Numbers, and they work really well. For the sake of time, I won't go into some of the equations that I've written, but suffice it to say that they hurt my head to go back and look at now.
Right. Right. And the other corollary to or other aspect of all this is that, to me, the output from these apps looks way better than stuff coming out of Word and Excel. I like the charts that Apple's offering with Pages and Numbers. And Keynote, I mean, PowerPoint can go off and die. I hate PowerPoint. I hate seeing PowerPoint presentations. I honestly just tense up and get cold with dread at the notion of seeing a PowerPoint presentation. I don't care how good you are. It's just a crappy app.
You know, you can do a lot of things in PowerPoint to make presentations look a lot better than they normally do. That said, you can typically tell when someone has created a presentation in PowerPoint without ever seeing the computer it's running on or seeing the application before the slides appear. And I think that you can create substantially more professional-looking presentations in Keynote than you can in in PowerPoint. Now, that said, there are many limitations in using Keynote on the iPad, and I have done presentations with my iPad, and I have been able to create presentations that look nice and flowed well. But I did have to change how I was going to create those presentations to accommodate the fact that I was using my iPad. So, yes, there's definitely some room for improvement there. And I think that will come.
But it's pretty full-featured, man. There's a lot you can do.
Oh, yeah. I was actually surprised with how much I was able to do with Keynote on my iPad. I thought it was going to be far more limiting than it was. And I know what I'm doing with Keynote, and I have certain expectations from these applications. So, yes, I felt hobbled a little bit, but not to the degree that I felt that Keynote was an unusable application on my iPad.
Right.
It just there were some differences with the way things worked. There were some transitions and things that I couldn't use. The big problem for me was finding out that that Keynote on the iPad doesn't support Photoshop native files. So I had to convert everything to PNG. But had I actually read the manual, I would have known that.
Right. So it's not a full, actually, for some people it could be a replacement, actually. I think there are some people that could do just about everything they ever needed to do with Pages, Keynote, and Numbers on the iPad without ever touching them on the Mac again.
I think that for some casual users, you are absolutely right. It would be plenty.
Right. And the other thing that Gary talks about is document file transfers and the fact that the iPad doesn't have a lot of features or doesn't have any built-in services in that area. And my answer to that is simply Dropbox.
That's my answer to that as well. And so if Gary were to come back and say, yes, but that's not built in to the system, Gary, you are correct.
Absolutely.
However,
it's free.
It's free, and I think it's an excellent solution.
Yeah,
and if I was using a netbook, I would be using Dropbox in exactly the same way.
Yeah, I would too, actually. Yeah, absolutely, positively. And if you have an iOS device or an Android device or a BlackBerry, you should get Dropbox because it makes it so, so easy to get files on and off your device.
And it can be an absolute lifesaver. Some of the files that are critical to the way I work on my computer are actually stored in my Dropbox folder as opposed to in other locations on my hard drive. Mm-hmm. So, like when my laptop died recently and I had to get a loaner laptop while mine was in the shop, I didn't have to worry about where are all my 1Password database files and things like that. It's all in my Dropbox. I just connected with the new computer. All my data was there.
Right.
And yeah, so there you go. Another little plug for Dropbox. But that's my preferred file transfer method with my iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad.
In the show notes, why don't we put both of our Dropbox referral links?
Oh, that's a good idea.
And then people like the people that love me more than you can use mine, and the people that love you more than me, I find that hard to fathom. But whatever.
As do I.
You can use but basically Dropbox is free. You get 2 gigs of online storage. A cloud-based storage actually is a much better way of putting that. And you can buy additional storage, but you can also get additional storage just for getting other people to sign up through your referral link. So we'll put both of our referral links on there for you guys to use if you don't already have Dropbox.
That sounds great. And I think this is going to be an excellent study in proving that people love you more. Okay with that.
It's going to be the other way around.
Cuddly,
no, it's going to be Jeff Gamet for the win. Anyway, be that as it may, Gary, you were welcome to be more comfortable designing stuff on your netbook and doing productivity stuff on your netbook, and and I respect that. I, however, if I had a choice between doing a lot of this stuff on even a MacBook Pro or my iPad, I would probably end up choosing the iPad. I am that pleased with Pages, Numbers, and Keynote.
And Gary, I was ready to buy a netbook, and I was debating between running Linux or turning it into a Hackintosh. And then the iPad came out, and got my iPad, and thought, yeah, I really don't need the netbook now. So it turns out for me, the iPad actually is the better productivity and content creation tool. And if it turns out to be the netbook for you, I'm okay with that.
Righto. And so if you want to complain about something that we said, or take issue with something we said, or tell us that you love Jeff more than me, you can write us at acm@macobserver.com.
And remember,
that sounds like a great place to take us out.
Okay, I have to agree. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's at twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/tmobrian. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Down.